I was watching. She felt a cold rage building inside. She should have left him to Ober-Balron, and rather than trying to make use of him, or simply killed him herself. "Who do you think you are to question me?" Her warning was unmistakable. "Someone looking for the truth. Why don't you try admitting it? I think you'd better go. You've worn out your welcome." He shook his head slowly. "I don't think I want to." At the rear of the cottage, Brecken was crouched in front of the back door, trying to release the lock. It was a simple enough mechanism, but he was working in shadow without any sort of light to aid him. Flink stood close behind, urging him on.
"Quickly now, young elf! We haven't a second to lose! Get us inside for cat's sake! Your friend won't last out there alone for very long. As a distraction, he's a bit lacking in imagination." "I thought the Moorcat was there to help." "Fade will do what she can, but Moorcats are notoriously fickle and inclined to wander off. Hurry, will you?"
Brecken was hurrying, and Flink wasn't doing anything to help. He wanted to mention this, but let it go. Flink had supplied the plan, even if it didn't require much from him. The Moorcat, on the other hand, might prove a much-needed ally. Fade was her name, Flink had informed him. Besides being huge, Fade seemed able to disappear and reappear at will with barely a noticeable transition between the one and the other. Granted, all Moorcats possessed this ability, but not with the dexterity and thoroughness of Fade. Also, Brecken did not think the cat was Flink's creature. She might be responding to commands he was giving, but somehow the Elven Prince doubted it. Once or twice, the forest imp had instructed her to do something while they were creeping through the trees to reach the cottage from separate directions, but the cat had pretty much ignored him. Now Dar was tasked with confronting Plesir, and Brecken and Flink were responsible for getting Tasha out of the cottage. Where Fade was and what she was planning to do was a mystery to all of them, including Flink. For when Dar asked the little man to explain what the Moorcat would be doing while the rest of them carried out their parts, he had shrugged.
"Oh, Fade will do what Moorcats do, you can be sure. Whatever it will be helpful to us. No need to give it another thought."
All well and good for him to say, but Brecken wasn't so sure. He fumed and fumbled, and somehow the lock released. With Flink breathing down his neck, he opened the door a crack and peered inside. No one visible, no sounds of anyone moving about, no lights. He looked back at the forest imp and nodded, and they slipped through the doorway and into the cottage. Right away, Brecken sensed the presence of another person. Then he remembered Flink mentioning there was someone besides Tasha and Plesir inside the house. He crouched down and listened for a moment. His elven senses were much better than those of most other races, and he could tell from the sounds that there were two people sleeping somewhere ahead of them.
"Two sleepers,"
Flink whispered needlessly in his ear, his breath hot and musky.
"One on the floor directly ahead, one in the room on the left."
Brecken nodded without comment and moved ahead toward the door on the left. If Tasha was still here, she was most likely the one in the bedroom. They moved soundlessly through the darkness, feeling their way along the wall, conscious now of a barely audible conversation that was taking place ahead of them, just outside the cottage. Ignoring the urgency of their situation, the elf and the forest imp eased through the doorway toward the sleeper in the bed. Moving swiftly to make sure who it was, they were rewarded with a clear view of Tasha Kanin, revealed in a filter of moonlight shining through the bedroom window. Even Brecken, who had never met her, knew who it was. He started to lift the girl off the bed, but Flink stayed his arm and pulled him down so he could whisper in his ear.
"She knows me, but not you. If she wakes and sees you, she might scream or struggle. Best if I be the one to carry her."
Brecken frowned.
"No offense, but are you strong enough?"
Flink gave him a look.
"I carried her almost a mile from where I found her after the fire burned Driska's home. I think I can manage here."
He was insistent to the point of snappishness, and the elven prince hesitated. Then he shook his head.
"No, I'll do it."
He rose quickly before the imp could voice any further objections, sliding his arms under the sleeping girl, drawing her close to him and gathering her into the cradle of his arms. For just an instant her eyes seemed to open and then close again. Brecken took a closer look. Had he seen correctly? But she was sleeping so soundly, it appeared it would have taken a great deal to wake her, so he dismissed the matter.
"Time to go,"
he whispered. They turned for the doorway, and found themselves face to face with Tavo Kanin. For a few endless moments, Dar Lee and Clizia Porse stared at each other in a confrontation that both knew neither was about to back down from. Dar tensed as he watched tendrils of steam leak from Clizia's fingertips. In a moment she would strike at him. He held his sword before him like a shield, wondering if he had the strength to withstand what was about to happen.
"You were warned," Clizia said softly.
There are moments in life so charged with terrible possibility and so rife with hushed warnings that everything seems to slow to a near stop in anticipation. Those who experience such moments always remember later how clear everything seemed, how much they distinctly recalled. Or they remember nothing at all. For Dar Lee it would be the former. His gaze fixed on Clizia Porse with an intensity that, if visceral, would have burned a hole completely through her. When he saw her hands move, a barely noticeable shifting of fingers that a less experienced man would have missed completely, he threw himself to one side. Even so, the fire whips she uncoiled from her fingers to lash out at him whistled close enough that he could feel their heat. As he struck the ground, he rolled. He was buried now in a deep layer of fog, momentarily invisible within its blanket. She would come after him, he knew. She would search him out and finish him. As if to prove his point, he watched the burning ropes slice through the insubstantial broom of his concealment at the place where he had landed moments earlier, flames bursting brightly as they struck the hard earth, leaving scorch marks in their wake. Dar got to his knees, his sword still in his hands, as he waited for whatever was to happen next. The fire whips crackled with dark magic, and he knew Clizia was hunting for him. He flattened himself against the ground within the mist, scooting swiftly to one side as the magic-born fire burned all around him in bright lines. He told himself to be patient, not to panic. All he was doing was buying time for Brecken and Flink. But how much more was required before his companions had Tarsha free? Then he heard someone scream from inside the house, the sound sharp and piercing, but he could not tell whose scream it was. A roar of anger surfaced at the end of the scream, high-pitched and terrifying, dying almost immediately into an oddly strange growling that then went silent. The flame whips Clizia was holding disappeared. She would be wondering what was happening too. Dar sprang to his feet in response. Certain the old woman suspected the truth, that Dar had come for Tarsha and likely had not come alone. She would be quick enough now to abandon the attack on him and rush back into the cottage. Emerging from the layer of fog, he saw her, already turning toward the front of the cottage, her dark form slouching for the opening. He yelled her name, and his blade blazed to life with the glow of its magic. She turned back momentarily, then gave him a dismissive look, and took another step toward the door before shrieking from what she found blocking her way. Fade filled the entry with her considerable bulk, snarling jaws, muzzle pulled back to reveal her huge, curved fangs. Even from where he was standing, almost 20 feet away, Dar heard the gasp that escaped Clizia's lips. She was momentarily paralyzed by the suddenness of the big cat's appearance, but in the next instant it had disappeared. By then, Dar was moving toward the cottage, yelling Clizia's name to make her turn back, but almost without looking. She cast a spell on the fog surrounding him, and it began to swell, growing taller than he was and wrapping about him. In seconds, there was no air, and he was suffocating. Inside the cottage, another stare-down was underway. Tavo, having entered the room soundlessly, was confronting Brecken Elisadil and Flink, who had just turned to leave, the former carrying Tarsha in his arms. Brecken had the elf stones, but they were tucked in his pocket, and unless he set down the girl, he couldn't reach them. Even then, he wasn't sure if they would be of any help. He might have been undecided about what to do, but Flink was not. The forest imp launched himself at Tavo, wrapped his scrawny arms about one leg, and bit down. The resulting howl was blood-curdling. Tavo gritted his teeth against the pain, emitting a dangerous growl, then shook his leg to rid himself of Flink. The forest imp bit him again, but this time Tavo's response was more a roar than a scream. When shaking his attacker off failed to work, he finally reached down with both hands, fastened his fingers on Flink's clothing, then yanked him loose and threw him across the room. What else he might have done after that was more than Brecken cared to imagine, but Tavo never got a chance to demonstrate. Releasing his grip on Tasha while keeping one arm locked around her waist as he swung her into an upright position, the Elven Prince took two quick steps forward and slammed his fist into the side of Tavo's head. Tavo's face turned white from the force of the blow, and he dropped to the floor unconscious. Flink was back at his side.
"Give her to me," he snapped. "You need to use the elf stones against the witch. We may have to fight our way out of here."
Brecken obeyed, knowing the other was right. Glazier was still out there, possibly blocking their path. Gently he lowered the still unconscious Tasha into the forest imp's arms. To his surprise, Flink took the girl from him and held her up with no apparent effort. Brecken hesitated a moment, just long enough for Flink to give him a look, and then they were out the door, elf stones in hand, running. Right into Clizia, who was just entering. Brecken ran into her with such force that he knocked her backward onto the floor. Clizia's head slammed against the wooden planks as she fell, but it seemed to have no effect. Her eyes fixed on him, filled with malice, and her hands began to summon her dark magic. Then Fade was there, huge and forbidding, towering over the fallen druid, one great paw holding her down, pushing on her chest. Clizia gasped, the breath rushing from her lungs from the weight of that paw. In seconds, she was unconscious. Again, the moorcat disappeared. Had there been more time to think about it, Brecken might have considered binding and gagging both Clizia and Tavo Kanan, but at this point he was only thinking about getting out of there as quickly as possible, of taking Tasha somewhere safe. And just about then he was distracted by Dar, shouting the Lee battle cry, flashes from his dark blade visible through the front windows of the cottage. Yelling for Flink to follow, he charged down the hallway, through the living quarters, and out onto the porch. The fog had risen considerably. It was now almost to the cottage roof. Deep in its midst, the magic of the Sword of Lee was scattering arcs of brightness as it cut at the vapour.
"Dar!"
Brecken yelled for him.
"Brecken!"
his friend managed to yell, and then his breath was cut off. The Elven Prince realized what was happening and responded at once, pointing the elf stones toward the sound of his friend's voice. Brilliant blue light blazed to life and flashed into the thickest of the mist. As it burrowed in, the tentacles drew back with a shudder, shrinking away from the elven magic as if burned. Seconds later it was back to its former depth, of about 3 feet, and Dar could be seen standing within it. The blade was choking and gasping as he breathed the night air, but he signalled to Brecken that he was all right. Together they made for the concealment of the woods, anxious to get clear before either Clizia or Tasha's brother woke up again.
"Where's Tasha?"
Dar asked as they reached the fringe and plunged into the trees.
"Flink has her?"
Brecken stopped and looked back uncertainly.
"At least he did when I came to help you. He was right behind me."
Dar wheeled around, seeing no one following.
"We have to go back."
Brecken grabbed his arm.
"We can't do that. Look, that forest gnome, or whatever he calls himself, has her safely in hand. He might have gone out the way we came in, through the rear door. We have to return to where he found us and wait for him to come back. Both Clizia and Tavo were unconscious. They couldn't have recovered fast enough to do anything to stop him. He just went another way."
Dar looked uncertain, but finally nodded.
"Let's hurry, then."
They passed deeper into the trees and began working their way to where Flink had found them watching the cottage and its occupants. They went swiftly, not bothering with stopping to see what was happening in the clearing, leaving that for when they reached their destination. As they crept through the trees, both were searching the dark for some sign of Tasha and the forest imp, half expecting to see them emerge from the shadows. But neither appeared. They were not at the agreed-upon meeting point either. By now Dar was almost certain they had fallen into Clizia's hands and were prisoners. He mentioned it again to Brecken, but the Elven Prince shook his head.
"The imp was halfway out the door behind me. He was safely away from both Clizia and Tavo. If he had fallen or been grabbed or otherwise attacked, he would have gotten off a warning, and I would have heard. I still think he went the other way, out the rear door of the cottage. Maybe that moorcat found him. Maybe the three of them went somewhere and are waiting for morning. The imp might have decided that was safer than coming back here."
As if to emphasize this, Clizia appeared on the cabin porch,
her black robes wrapped about her, with Tavo a step behind. The two stared out into the dark for a few moments, and then huddled together. Dar could hear nothing of what they said, but he could guess the gist of it. He waited to see what they would do, but to his surprise, they did not set out to search for their attackers or Tasha, but turned around and went back inside. Although Dar and Brecken waited a long time afterward for one or the other to re-emerge, neither did, and the cottage remained dark and silent. Finally, Dar nudged Brecken and they slipped back through the trees, far enough away from the cottage that they could speak without risk of being overheard.
"Something isn't right," the blade said, when they were safely away.
He sat down on a log, his chin in his hand, thinking.
"There's an explanation here that we're not seeing."
Brecken nodded.
"A different explanation than we've been considering."
They were silent a moment.
"Remember when Flink said Driska would want him to help us, even though he was bad a while back?"
Dar asked suddenly.
"Bad about what, though? What do you think he was talking about?"
"No idea.
He made their relationship sound rather tenuous. So what if it had something to do with Tasha?"
"That's a bit of a stretch, isn't it?
But then the imp was pretty insistent that I let him carry Tasha. I didn't agree at first, but then it seemed I might need to use the elf stones, so I gave her to him."
Dar stared at his friend.
"You know what? I don't want to wait until morning. I want to find Tasha and Flink right now. Can you use the elf stones to find out where they are?"
Brecken didn't bother with a response. He simply brought out the stones, clasped them in his fist, and held them up to the night. 20. Clesia Porse woke to discover that Tasha was gone and Tavo was lying unconscious on the floor. She was incensed beyond words, but anger quickly turned to cold and calculating determination. Darlie and his friends might think they had gotten the best of her, but they would find out differently soon enough. She had not outlived and outsmarted all her enemies over the years to be tricked by the blade and his foolhardy accomplices. For just an instant, as she bent to revive Tavo, she wondered if it was possible that Driska Ark had somehow escaped his imprisonment in Paranor and come back to set things right, but she dismissed the idea almost at once. If Driska were behind this, he would have been the one confronting her, and not Darlie. She roused Tavo, brought him to his feet and determined his head was clear enough when he began to rant about Tasha. She leaned close, a bony finger to his lips.
"Say nothing more until I tell you to," she hissed. "We'll get your sister back. Be quiet and come with me."
They walked through the house and onto the porch and stood looking out at the night. For long minutes neither spoke, and then the young man whispered,
"Why aren't we doing something?"
She leaned close once more.
"We are doing something. We're letting those fools who have Tasha see us. They will be out there watching. They will want to discover what we intend to do. So we're going to make them believe what we want them to believe. This is a game we're playing, and I want to be very sure we end up the winners."
She turned away, took him by the arm, and led him inside again.
"They split into two groups,"
she whispered as she walked him through the house.
"Darlie, formerly Blade to the High Druid and Driska's friend, was alone. He was the one distracting me when the others came in the back way to retrieve Tasha. Who were they? You must have seen."
Tavo frowned and shook his head.
"I don't know. A small, furry creature of some sort. I've never seen one like it before. Like a rodent that could walk. And an elf. They took Tasha, as I've already pointed out. So let's just go find them."
She took him all the way through the cottage to the rear door. Once there, she made a series of gestures and spoke a few strange words. Then she led him outside, hurrying him away from the building and into the woods. She was aware of the way Tavo was looking at her, as if wondering what sort of trick she might be playing. So she stopped just inside the trees and turned to him.
"I provided us with a momentary cloaking, so we would be hidden from watching eyes. That way they will believe we have settled down to sleep for the rest of the night, intending to search for Tasha when it is light. They likely think we will have to track them, having no idea of where they might have gone. But they are mistaken."
"You know where Tasha is?
He sounded excited. His lips curled into a snarl. His hands curled into fists.
"Once we find her, I'll finish what I started and punish her for her betrayal. I'll make sure she doesn't get away from me again."
Clesia took hold of the front of his tunic and yanked him close.
"You listen to me. You want to find your sister? You want to see her dead? Fine by me. But you won't achieve either one if you don't do exactly what I say. We'll find her because she carries my mark and will be easy to track down. But she's not to be harmed, not until she has fulfilled her purpose, not under any circumstance. Do you understand me, Tavo Kainin?"
He shook his head slowly, a sullen and defiant look crossing his face.
"You don't want to make me angry,"
he spat at her. She laughed.
"I know what sort of power you have, and I know what you can do when it's working properly, but for the moment it isn't. Not against me. I shut that part of it down with a little magic of my own when I took you in. Do you wish to test this? Or will you do what I say?"
The dark look faded a shade.
"All right,"
he muttered. "Then let's go find your sister. Remember what I said about Tasha. No harm must be done to her."
She paused.
"Though you can do what you want with her kidnappers once we find her. They don't matter. They are bad people. They don't deserve to live."
He nodded.
"I know what to do."
She did a conjuring, and images formed on the night air, revealing Tasha and the furry creature that had taken her. Clesia wondered where the other two were, but would be satisfied just to find the girl. Beckoning to Tavo, she set out. Together the pair walked through the forest for a long distance, navigating by moonlight shining down from a sky cleared of clouds by the passing storm. Tasha and her captor were easy to track thanks to the mark she had placed on the girl. She walked without speaking, but her odd companion mumbled and growled with regularity, speaking to himself or to the one he called Fluken. The young man was unbalanced, but he was also functional, and the combination made him dangerous. After this was done, she would have to decide what to do with him. It would be better to kill him and be done with it, but she kept thinking there might be a use for him, a use she hadn't yet recognized. And for that, of course, she needed the girl. Flink had watched Brecken Lee hurry toward the front of Driscarrach's cottage. He heard the elven prince calling for him to follow. Still cradling the pretty Tasha Kainin in his arms, holding her close enough that he could feel the beating of her heart, he waited until the other was out of sight, then promptly turned the other way. There was no reason to expose this beautiful creature to further danger by going the elf's way. She was deep in sleep, still lost in her dreams, and he had to do what was best for her while there was yet time. She might have died if she had remained the old woman's prisoner. She might have been tortured or been subjected to further indignities by her brother. The elf and his companion had good hearts, and they clearly wanted what was best for her, but did they even know what that was? Did they understand how precious she was? He didn't think so. Not like he did. He hurried to reach the back door, the sleeping girl no burden to him at all, in spite of his size. For a small fellow, he was surprisingly strong. He would not have stayed alive for all these centuries otherwise. Even the passage of time had done little to weaken him. He remained very much the same as he had always been, and that was true in ways that only Driscarrach understood, even if the druid didn't always approve of those ways, or the choices Flink made. Forest imps were unusual creatures. Some would say odd. Driscarrach might agree, although he would never admit it to Flink. But he understood how Flink was susceptible to rash and selfish behaviour, given the right impetus. Such as a reason to indulge his desperate craving for someone to love him. Like this pretty girl, Tasha. Flink understood this weakness, but now and then it proved too strong for him to resist. He glanced down at the girl and smiled. White blonde hair and lavender eyes, skin smooth and white as chalk, possessed of beauty and magic and charm. Exotic in a way only great treasures were. Tasha was a rare creature. She deserved to be cared for. No one saw this quite as clearly as Flink did, so they were less cautious about the dangers she faced. He had looked after her when the assassins had come to Driska's home and set it on fire. If not for Flink, and, to a less important degree, Fade, she might have been killed or badly injured. But he had saved her and taken her away to his home, to make sure she remained safe. He thought about how good it had felt to have her there in his underground home, his special guest, his private treasure. She had been sleeping, of course, because it was necessary. First, because she was exhausted and damaged and needed to rest and heal. Second, because if she were to agree to stay with him permanently, she needed time to get used to the idea that living with him was something to be desired. Driska hadn't seen it that way, but the druid didn't understand everything about how the world worked, not even as wise as he was. Flink, on the other hand, had more experience, having lived so much longer and thereby gained a more extensive world view and a deeper understanding of life. Tasha would have come to see that, if she had spent more time with him. She might have come to love him. Not in a physical way, because he was well beyond that, but with a deep and abiding friendship. Time was a healer and a teacher, and people just needed enough space to allow for understanding and acceptance. He had thought he might find this the last time he took Tasha, but Driska had prevented her from staying with him then. Now Driska was no longer here, and if the druid was truly trapped in the limbo existence of Paranor, he might never return. Flink had to make plans accordingly. He had to accept that now it would be up to him to care for this lovely child. So he carried Tasha Kane in from the cottage and into the forest, moving steadily but carefully so as to leave no trail, picking his way over ground that would reveal no sign of his passing, then angling back toward his own stretch of the woods and his home. He was sorry he had to do this to the elven prince and the blade, but they would never have let him take Tasha otherwise. They would have kept her with them as they tried to find a way to bring back Driska, even when the odds were so steeply stacked against them. They would try and fail, and in the process they might get the pretty girl killed. He could not allow that to happen. Not when he was being given a second chance, not when he was so certain this was the right thing to do. It was still dark when he neared his underground home, but the first tinges of morning light were appearing through gaps in the trees, and in an hour it would be full daylight. He approached his home with caution. There were no indications yet of a pursuit, and he detected no sounds or movements. He stood before his hidden entry and prepared to trigger its release. Off to one side, right at the edge of the trees, something moved. He froze momentarily, his gaze shifting toward the movement. Fade slid from the shadows, her huge grey and black body sinuous and sleek in the near darkness. She came out of the trees and stopped, looking at him. Then she sat back on her haunches, her lantern eyes fixing on him and holding him in place. She was making a judgment, he realized. She could not communicate, but she was letting him know she was taking his measure for some reason. Likely as a warning she felt he needed. About the girl, perhaps? He frowned. Well, if Fade was giving him a warning about that, she was wasting her time. It was not her place to pass judgment on him. A creature so many times older, an ancient being whose ways she was not in the least familiar with. Yet she continued to watch him. Dismissing her with a mental shrug, the forest imp knelt, lowering Tasha Kanin to the ground. He felt for the release to his trap door and turned it a half-twist counterclockwise, then a full-twist clockwise. Then he found the handle and opened the grass and weed-covered hatch and laid it back. Picking the girl back up again, he carried her down the waiting stairs and into his home. After laying her on his bed and covering her with a blanket, he went back to close the trap door. A quick glance around when he poked his head up revealed Fade still sitting off to one side, watching. Flink stared back at her a moment, a twinge of doubt tugging at him. Something wasn't right. The big cat wasn't sitting there because she enjoyed looking at Flink, or had decided to take up a watch on his abode. She was telling Flink to be careful. The forest imp regarded the moor cat for a few moments longer, then pulled the trapdoor closed behind him and locked it. Tasha Kanin was sleeping deeply until she felt something nudge her consciousness, bringing her out of her comforting rest and back toward wakefulness. It was a familiar voice, a rough rumble she had heard and listened to before. There was no face, no presence, just the voice as she stirred beneath the covers of the bed on which she lay, pulling herself back into the present and whatever was waiting for her.
"It would be best if you find another shelter, quickly, and look for Dali to protect, and stay away. But God wants to—" "Driska, hark!"
All the rest of what he was saying was lost to her. It was as if a filter was separating and breaking apart his sentences, but she sensed fear and urgency in the words nevertheless. Her eyes opened in response, and to her surprise, she knew right away where she was. No longer in her bedroom in Driska's cottage, but once again in the underground home of Flink, sleeping in his bed. She forced herself to gather her wits and sit up. A quick look around confirmed that everything was just as she remembered it from before, although there was no sign of the forest imp. Then suddenly he popped up from behind a stack of crates off to one side, his wizened face scrunched up in a mix of excitement and uncertainty.
"Darsha of the beautiful eyes! Welcome back to my home. You are my guest once more. I brought you here from Driska's cottage. It wasn't easy, you know. I had to steal you away from the witch who was keeping close watch over you. Did she hurt you?"
The girl shook her head.
"You stole me? How did you manage that?" "I am a clever fellow, that's how. I waited until the witch was sleeping, caused a distraction to bring her out front, and while she was still muddle-headed, packed you up and whisked you out the back door. Now you are safe."
She fixed him with her sharpest gaze. How much of this was true? With Flink it was difficult to say.
"And what about my brother? Did you see him?" "I saw him. He was sleeping. I was so quiet he never even stirred while I was carrying you out. Is he really your brother? He was attacking you. He wanted to hurt you."
"He is my brother nevertheless. Tavo doesn't understand things as well as he needs to, and he does things he shouldn't."
"He is dangerous. He has powerful magic, and he used it to hurt you. You mustn't let him near you again."
She nodded, not wanting to talk about it further.
"Thank you for bringing me here, but I have to leave right away. Clizia will come looking for me. She is a druid, not a witch. If she finds me here, she might try to hurt you for helping me. I have to go before she finds out where I am."
Flink shook his head vehemently. His gestures were frantic.
"No, no, Dasha, no! You must stay here, where I can keep you safe. If you leave, they will find your trail and hunt you down. But they cannot find me. They cannot find my home. I was careful to leave no sign. They will find you gone, but they will not know it was me who took you. The witch will not find you here."
Dasha swung her legs over the side of his bed. Her head was cotton-filled, and her eyes still heavy with whatever had put her to sleep. The tea Clizia had given her, perhaps, with a drug slipped into the brew to make sure she could not function. But she felt the same way she had after Driska had found her in Flink's underground abode and carried her out several weeks ago. She was reminded of it right away, and she found herself wondering if the forest imp had drugged her as well. She stood up slowly, allowing herself a few moments to make sure her sense of balance was functioning.
"Clizia Porce can find anyone anywhere, I think. I can't stay, Flink, and not just because of Clizia, but because Driska is in trouble and needs my help. He sent an apparition of himself to me while I was in his cottage. He managed to contact me and told me he was trapped in Paranor and trying to get out, but mostly he warned me about Clizia and what she might do to me." "There you are, then. You have to stay here. And stay safe. You can't just leave. Where would you go?"
"I have to find the blade, Darli, and go with him to Paranor, or at least to where Paranor was, to help Driska. I have to help him, Flink. You should want this too. He is your friend, isn't he?"
"Yes, yes."
The forest imp made an impatient gesture.
"Would you want to come with me?"
"No, I can't leave here. This is my home. This forest is where I belong. My kind doesn't wander."
He sounded miserable.
"I thought maybe you belonged here, too, with me. You would be happy here, Dasha. You would, really."
She smiled, running her hands through her hair as she considered how to respond. She saw now what he wanted. He was desperately lonely and had decided she could be the cure. But it was wishful thinking, entirely misguided.
"My kind does wander," she said finally, "and I have responsibilities that I cannot shirk. I must leave. I am sure you would make me happy if I could stay, but we have to be what we are. We can be friends, Flink. I hope we can settle for that."
"It is too dangerous,"
he tried again.
"Yes, it is too dangerous. But so is staying here. Not just for me, but for you as well. If something happened to you because of me, I would never forgive myself. Do you see?"
Flink gave her a reproving look.
"Forest imps are quite capable of looking after themselves. We have not lived long lives by being incautious and unprepared. You are making a mistake by leaving, pretty Tasha. If you will just stay another day or so, I think you will see..."
She held up her hands to stop him there.
"No, I am determined in this, Flink. Drisker needs help, and if I can provide it, I must. Will you take me outside again and guide me to the edge of the forest, so I can find my way?"
He was about to reply when the trap door to his home exploded. When the trap door to Flink's home tore open, revealing Clizia and Tavo, it heaved upward momentarily before slamming back down again at a crooked angle that blocked entry once more. Tasha instinctively backed away, trying to summon the wish song to her defense, but she realized at once she couldn't. The magic was beyond her. Whether because of her injuries or something in the tea Clizia had given her, she had no command of the wish song whatsoever. But Flink was already moving, grabbing her hand and pulling her after him.
This way, now!"
She went with him, borne along by the urgency of his words and her own substantial fears. Deeper into his home they rushed, through a curtain and into another tunnel. Once within the darkness, Flink yanked her to a stop.
"Tasha Kanan, you must go alone now. Down this tunnel to its end, and then out into the trees. Go find Dali. He is somewhere nearby. I will stop those who are following. Go!"
Numbly, she did as she was told, moving off into the darkness, her eyes adjusting to an almost total absence of light. All that saved her from having to find her way blindly were glowing bits of stone embedded in the tunnel walls that gave off just enough illumination to reveal the curve of the passageway. She did not look back, knowing what was about to happen. Flink intended to face Clizia and Tavo alone. How he would stop them was impossible to imagine. She did not think the forest imp was a match for the druid or her brother separately, let alone together. Without the wish song's magic, she could do nothing to help. Rationally, she knew this. But to just leave him? She was crying, but she brushed away the tears and hurried on. The tunnel was narrow and winding, and it took her a long time to reach its end. There she found stairs leading upward to another trapdoor and an exit out. The trapdoor opened easily, perhaps because she was opening it from within rather than without, so that she emerged into the forest once more. From there she began to run, heading toward the glimmer of the rising sun, away from what she believed to be the direction of Flint's underground home. She ran as fast as she could, not bothering to try to hide her passage, not worrying that any pursuers might try to track her, all of her concentration on simply escaping. She soon lost her way. Tree limbs criss-crossed overhead to create a thick canopy, and even though the sun had risen high enough that its brightness flooded the sky, it was no longer clear which way was east. She was still moving as fast as she could, but already she was beginning to tire. Her strength was not yet fully restored, and her stamina was quickly sapped. She felt she might not even be travelling in a straight line. She thought she heard a voice calling her name, but was frightened of who it might be and veered sharply toward the heavier shadows amid the larger of the forest's ancient trees. She had begun to pick up her pace again, propelled onward mostly by fear, when abruptly she ran right into someone. Strong hands seized her arms, and she found herself looking up into the blue eyes of an elf.
"Tasha." He spoke her name softly and smiled. "It's all right. You're safe now."
A weary, resigned Flink watched Tasha Kanan disappear into the dark, then turned back toward his underground home. Already he could hear the intruders smashing apart the trap door that blocked their way in. The locking mechanism within the frame was designed specifically to keep an enemy from just smashing through directly. If he had not long ago taken such a precaution, it would have been impossible for pretty Tasha to escape at all. He regretted that she was lost to him, but he understood that it was the only choice left if he wanted to keep her unharmed. And he wanted that more than anything. Still, it was hard to accept what that meant. It was an acknowledgement of the reckoning he had been putting off for centuries, the conclusion of a life that at times had seemed to him as if it might never end. But he had not lived this long to pretend he did not understand that it was inevitable, that it was the necessary consequence of his decision to save the girl. It would have been wonderful if he had been able to persuade this rare and lovely creature to live with him, to be there to keep him company and share his lonely existence. But she had made it clear that this would not happen, no matter what he did. And so now he had to choose whether to save her or give her over to her enemies. Which was really no choice at all. Now he must do what he could to slow them down before his inevitable demise. He found himself wishing that he could see Driska Ark one last time. He had never shared such a close friendship with another human in all the years gone by. He arrived back inside his home just in time to see the witch and her young companion push their way through the debris that had barred their entry. The witch looked furious, the young man sullen and dangerous. Bad people who would try to do him harm if he gave them cause and opportunity.
"Welcome,"
he said, executing a small, precise bow. They looked at him as if he were insane.
"Where is she?"
the witch snapped.
"Gone."
No need to pretend he didn't know who she was talking about.
"Gone? Gone where?"
Her ancient face was wrinkled deep by lines of displeasure.
"Speak up, creature!"
Flink drew himself up to his full height of 4 feet 6 inches.
"I am a forest imp, and I was born to a species that found its beginnings in the time of fairy. I am a rare and special creature, so treat me with respect."
The young man sneered.
"What are you again? You look like a large rodent of some sort. Are you a mole or a badger?"
"I am more than you will ever be,"
Flink answered, shifting his gaze to the witch. He added,
"As for the girl, Shrighai Obsenen, she is beyond your reach."
The old woman actually smiled.
"No one is beyond my reach, especially not that girl. I have placed my mark on her and can find her again whenever I wish, no matter where you might have sent her. You may be very old, but you aren't very wise."
Flink shrugged.
"Perhaps not, but I am very determined. Tasha Kanan has been sent to safety, and even though you may try to track her, you will not be able to. Your search ends here."
"If so," the witch hissed, "then so does your life. Perhaps that is a trade worth making. My life is my own, to do with as I choose."
The witch took a step forward.
"Not while you stand in my presence. Right now, your life belongs to me, and what becomes of it is not for you to decide. You overestimate your abilities, little imp."
"Or you do? Why not simply leave and go find sweet Tasha, if you think yourself so clever? Why even bother with me? Are you so afraid of me? Am I such a danger to your plans?"
"Let me have him,"
the young man said suddenly.
"I will make him tell us what he knows. I will flay the skin off him if he refuses. I will strip him of his sanity."
"Not just yet," the witch replied. "I want to spend some time with him myself. I want to know why he feels so confident, when his instincts must surely tell him he has met his end. What say you to that, imp?"
She was a creature of darkness, both without and within, and clearly capable of terrible things. Flink could see it in her appearance, hear it in her words, and feel it in her very presence. He curled up inside himself, a protective response. He had thought that taunting her about finding Tasha on her own might send her away, but the witch was not that sort. She was the kind that hunted and killed, and felt no remorse in doing so. She believed in tying up loose ends and disposing of all potential problems that might otherwise return to haunt her later. She would not be leaving Flink alive, no matter what else she might decide. He squared himself away, blocking her path. It was time. It was the moment he had expected, and he was ready for it.
"You will do what you must, and I will do the same. But you will never have the part of me you want, witch."
He lifted his wizened face slightly, a cunning look on his face.
"Come, show me what you intend to do."
Enraged, she took a step toward him, hands formed into claws lifting to shred his face. But then she saw something in his eyes, the truth of what he intended, and threw herself backward into Tavo.
"Get down!"
she screamed at him. Then Flink went rigid, his body stiffening, and with shocking suddenness, thousands of barbs exploded from his flesh, rocketing in all directions at once. Most struck the stone of the walls and ceiling and floor of his home, but enough to matter embedded themselves deep inside the flesh of his enemies. When the air cleared of deadly missiles, Flink was no more. Right away, Clizier could tell the barbs were poisoned. She could feel the poison's fire burning through her. She struggled to her feet and summoned a negation spell to counter the effects, swaddling herself in a smoky haze that shrouded her entirely as it began an extraction of the poisoned barbs. Nearly frantic with pain and a numbing sensation that was working its way through her damaged body, she then conjured an antidote that coated her like a second skin from head to foot. She worked on herself first, then on Tavo. Although she thought more than once as she struggled to save him that it would be far easier if she just let him die. In the end, she was so exhausted that she collapsed in a heap, waiting to see if her efforts had been successful. Either she had acted quickly enough to save them both, or they would die, writhing in pain. She had been careless and foolish in allowing herself to get so close to that vile creature. She had been overconfident, and that was inexcusable. No matter the rage and frustration his persistence in resisting her engendered, she should have known better. She called Tavo's name several times, but there was no answer. After long minutes, how many she couldn't have said, she felt a hint of strength returning to her body. She felt a marginal lessening of the pain. Sensation was returning. She breathed long and deeply, promising herself that if she recovered, she would not make a mistake like this again, swearing it on everything she held dear. She glanced over to where the forest imp had been standing when he exploded. Nothing recognizable left. A dark residue formed a wide stain on the floor. Particles of ash floated on the acrid air. She heard Tavo's whisper of disbelief.
"Why did he do that?"
"He is a fairy creature," she answered. "They are not, and never were like us. They can do things that are beyond us. He willed himself to die, and tried to take us with him." His whisper twisted into a snarl of rage.
"Now what do we do? You let this happen, old woman. What about Tasha? How do we find her without him?"
"Try listening to what I say. Your sister bears my mark, and she is mine whenever I wish it. We will find her easily enough. This imp thought to send her to safety, but he has merely postponed the inevitable."
"Stop your whining,"
Tavo moaned.
"Something's wrong with me. My head hurts. There's something in my eye."
And then he screamed, a long, dreadful wail of despair. She crawled over to him and dragged him around to where she could see his face. His left eye was gone. The poison had dissolved it. His good eye fixed on her.
"Don't look at me like that."
"Like what? Like you're missing an eye? It's nothing. You have another."
"What do you mean, nothing? It's my eye."
She seized the front of his tunic. "I'm tired of you, little man. I offered my help in finding your sister, and all you can do is whine about how things aren't going your way. Did you think this would be easy? Did you think she would just lie down and let you finish her like some helpless animal? How stupid are you?" His face had gone white. For the first time since she had encountered him, she saw fear in his eye, a reflection of doubt that he was capable of doing what he had set out to do. She patted his face. "Relax, Tavo. I will help you still."
"I don't need you to help me,"
he blurted out, his voice shaking. There were tears in his remaining eye, the tears of a little boy.
"I don't need anyone. You said you would keep her a prisoner, but you lied.
You let those men and that creature take her from me. Why should I trust you with anything?
Clesia fixed him with a gaze that would have turned a sane man to stone. One aged finger reached out and tapped him on his nose.
I have great things planned for you, she whispered. I would make you the most powerful man in the world, greater even than the druids when they walked the four lands. But for that to happen, you must do as I say and not question me. You must give me the chance to prove I can do what I say. So decide now. Are you going to listen to what I tell you, or go off on your own? If it is the latter, you will certainly cause problems for a while, wherever you go. But in the end, you will die. You will be killed and quickly forgotten. You will never know what you can be.
She held his gaze.
Which path will you take? Choose quickly. I have no more time to waste on you.
His eyes were bright with fear and loathing, and there was a glimmer of madness in his gaze that was unmistakable. His nod was barely perceptible.
I will go with you. Can we leave now?
Soon enough, she answered.
She dragged herself to her feet and waited for him to do the same.
Come with me.
Together they climbed from the forest imp's underground lair and back out into the morning light. Clesia was already thinking ahead to what she would do next. Suddenly her plans for Tavo Kanin were taking shape, formulated in a moment's inspiration while they lay exhausted and half-dead underground, the poison of the barbs only just defeated. It was all so simple. That Tavo had to be killed was indisputable. He was much too dangerous to be allowed to live, too unpredictable, too wrapped up in a struggle to control his own demons. But perhaps before she disposed of him, he could be made useful enough to advance her plans for the future. Even the most insane could sometimes serve a greater good. Clesia did not notice the lantern eyes watching her as she began the journey back to Driska's cabin. Nor did the young man. Their thoughts and their cautions were directed elsewhere. The eyes watched as they disappeared into the trees, then blinked once, and Fade materialized within the shadow of the huge old trunks of the forest, her massive body stretched out in the undergrowth. She remained where she was, long after the intruders departed, her senses directed toward the lair of the forest imp. She was waiting for him to emerge. She had waited for him before, sometimes for hours, sometimes longer. It was a ritual they shared. But on this day, he did not appear.
21.
It seemed Rokan Arnius was not one to sit around mulling things over. So once he decided he was leaving Varfleet behind, he wasted no more time. The very day after the incident at the sticky, wicked Hall of Chance, he packed up his clothing and personal effects, strapped on his weapons, closed and shuttered his warehouse lodgings, and, hauling a somewhat sceptical and reluctant Shay Umsford with him, set out. He had brought the boy into his private quarters the previous night to explain why he wanted to bring him along, which had left Shay more confused than he had been before. The boy was nothing if not quick-witted. You didn't survive long on the streets of a city like Varfleet otherwise. He was swift of foot and instinctually sharp enough to recognize the truth of things long before others did, making him more than able to smell out a scam. But Rokan Arnius was every bit as smart as Shay was, and his ability to explain something without actually saying much at all was unparalleled. What he told Shay was that he needed someone who could provide several valuable services, including a willingness to fetch and carry, provide a second set of eyes and ears, get into and out of tight places, and be willing to work long hours without complaint. The pay would be good, initially, but if he continued to excel at his job, it would eventually be great. Shay, he advised, in his matter-of-fact way of tacking something important on at the end of things, could end up wealthy. The boy took all this in without getting too excited. He liked Rokan's enthusiasm and found him fascinating to be around, but he had learned a long time ago that lack of substance frequently meant a lack of moral commitment, and he was worried that this might be the case here. Deep involvement with games of chance like pickroll did nothing to lessen his concerns. Rokan could persuade the bark to peel off a tree and join the logs in the fireplace, and this was not reassuring.
"It's this way, young Shay,"
he said at one point, as they feasted on cold quail and hot bread late that first night. "What I do is collect things. I'm a scavenger of a sort, but I'm very particular about what I scavenge and why. I relieve other people of what they least need or understand how to use wisely. I select these people out of the wider population, and I sit them down and usually persuade them to donate what they have without realizing they're doing so." Shay, no fool he, understood at once. "You're talking about taking their money at games of chance, like Curly this evening, playing pickerel." Rokan laughed merrily.
"I knew you were the right lad. So quick to see the truth. That skill will serve you well in the years to come, young Shay. Don't you ever lose it."
"So you take money from those who have plenty to spare by playing games with them. Then you pocket the money and keep it for yourself. But even if they don't need it, why is it right for you to take it from them and call it a donation? Seems to me this makes you just like them."
It was bold talk directed to a man like Rokan, about whom he really knew nothing. But Shay knew that you had to stand up to such men and challenge them if you wanted their respect. Rokan leaned forward across the small dining room table and fixed his eyes on the boy.
"I am nothing like those men. They have no other thought of what to do with their money than gamble it away. Their goal is to enrich themselves further by foolishly believing they can win, thereby ensuring a softer, more decadent life. They seek greater prosperity without purpose. I, on the other hand, game not to enrich myself, but to change the world for the better."
Shay stared.
"How do you do that? How are you changing the world?"
With a slow smile and a shrug of his shoulders, Rokan leaned back again.
"Why don't you come with me to Arishag, and let me show you?"
So Shay allowed himself to be persuaded, even though he hadn't the faintest idea what this was about. He had always told himself not to get into anything he didn't fully understand up front, and mostly he had done so. But this time he didn't. He was persuaded to make the deviation from his hard and fast rule for several very different reasons. First of all, he thought it was time to move on from Varfleet. Things had been stagnant of late, and now, since his last two jobs, increasingly dangerous. Besides, he had lived here his entire life and seen almost nothing of any other part of the country. Rokan was providing him with transportation out. It was a free ride to a new home. Second, he had a considerable amount of money in hand after combining the payments from the black-cloaked grandfather and Rokan. It was reasonable to assume there might be more to be earned from the latter, and once he had accumulated enough, he could settle permanently, be it here in Varfleet or another city in another part of the Four Lands. He was working toward a better life, one in which he no longer had to scurry about like a rat gathering bits of food. He wanted a real home. He wanted sufficient credits to merit recognition. He wanted to be valued. He wanted his advice sought after. But as an orphan who had lived most of his life by his wits and luck, he had learned one indisputable truth. You never got anywhere without taking a few risks. He had reminded himself of that earlier with both the grandfather and Rokan. Now and then you had to step across forbidden boundaries and jump into the fire. He felt strongly that this was one of those times. Something about Rokan suggested this was an opportunity not to be missed, even if he was still not sure he trusted the man. So after a quick stop to gather up his meager possessions, off he went with his benefactor, boarding a public transport that travelled once every other day from Varfleet to Arishag. Rokan purchased passage that provided them with a private cabin and special services, including food and drink and an attendant ready to see to their needs at any time during their journey. Seela did not accompany them to the loading dock, and once inside their cabin, Shay was about to ask why she wasn't going with them, when suddenly she appeared out of nowhere. She was as silky and irresistible as he remembered, and he smiled in spite of himself. Recognizing his response, she leaned into him to kiss his cheek.
"She likes you, lad," Rokan observed. "Should be interesting to see how that plays out down the road."
Jay wasn't sure he was the least bit ready to find out something as wild and mysterious as that promised to be, so he was quick to take his seat and turn his attention to watching the countryside as their vessel lifted away. Off to one side, he could hear Rokan cooing to Sila in an unfamiliar language, his words low and calming, as if she needed reassuring for some reason. He had to force himself not to look over at them. Some things were best left to the imagination. Nevertheless, when temptation got the better of him, and he risked a quick peek, he found